Hello and welcome to Light the Way with Dr. Colin Monger. He's the senior pastor of Shepherd of the Hills Church. At Light the Way, we believe the most powerful tool we possess when sharing our faith with others is the Word of God. It was the Apostle Paul that said, "Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of Christ." So as we open the Word together, it's our prayer that you'll not only receive what God has for you, but share what you learn with those you come in contact with. And now, here's Pastor Colin.
If you brought your Bible, would you open it to the book of Daniel chapter 3? The book of Daniel chapter 3. I have a question for you. Why do bad things happen to good people? If you've ever asked that question, then you're not alone. All of us at one point or another have wondered why bad things happen to good people. Why a loving God would allow such things to happen to people for what seemed to be no reason whatsoever. And usually that very question comes on the heels of some kind of a tragedy. By now you've probably heard of the most recent school shooting out in Denver, Colorado that killed a student, wounded 8 more. And maybe you even heard of the student who died. His name was Kendrick Castillo. He was a senior. And the reason he died was as the gunman was firing, he jumped in the way. And he sacrificed himself for the lives of his fellow students. Just a young man who was going to school, preparing to graduate this summer. A bright future. A family who loved him. It was just another day in life for Kendrick Castillo until it ended in senseless tragedy. When things like that happen, we're left with the question of why. Why would an all-powerful, all-knowing, loving God allow something like that to happen? Or what about when natural disaster strikes? Or jobs are lost, or families break up, or a loved one, or maybe yourself is diagnosed with incurable disease. People ask the question, why? And maybe you take the question a step farther and you say, well, why bother praying to a God who would let that happen? I prayed, I went to church, I studied, I tried to do everything right, and look, it didn't work. It still happened. Why pray to someone like that? It's not going to help. In Psalm 34, we read, many are the afflictions of the righteous. And even though the author goes on to say that the Lord will deliver him out of them all, we're still left with the question of why. Why would the righteous suffer affliction to begin with? Well, in our passage this morning, we see three young men with bright futures facing a very similar situation. They're facing a penalty of death, not because they broke the law, not because they tried to overthrow the government. In fact, by all accounts, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego served the king of Babylon with great distinction. There's nothing about their life or their behavior that would suggest this type of punishment is warranted. They're not suffering for anything they've done. They're suffering for their faith. They're suffering because of their relationship with God. And yet, even in the midst of that, we see they dare to be different. They dare to be faithful to the Lord, even as they go through the storm of their life. There's a few things that we can learn from their example and their experience. And the first is, no matter how hard we may try and avoid it, we all know the truth. Trouble will seek you. Sometimes you do nothing to cause it, and yet it finds you anyway. Second, the world will try and silence you. Your enemies will try and scare you. And fourth, through all of that, finally, people will see you. But trouble will seek you, and notice how it seeks them. Now, to give it some context, we want to back up just a little bit to chapter 2, verse 46, where it says, "Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel, and commanded that an offering and incense be offered up to him." Now you remember up to this point, Daniel was the only one that could give the king his dream. All the wise men, all the philosophers, all the learned people, all the scholars of Babylon fell flat when the king went to them for help. Daniel went to God, got the revelation, went to the king, gave it to the king. And it says here in verse 46, King Nebuchadnezzar fell down in response to that and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering and incense be offered up to him. Verse 47, the king answered and said to Daniel, "Truly your God is God of gods and Lord of kings. and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery. Then the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. Daniel made a request of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel remained at the king's court. So that's the backdrop, and now we go into chapter 3, verse 1. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura, in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, the prefects and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, treasurers, justices, magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image the king had set up. In all of that that we just read, something it doesn't tell you is between the end of chapter 2 and the beginning of chapter 3, 16 years have gone by. This is a long period of time. A decade and a half have gone by. And so for 16 years, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have served this king faithfully. For 16 years, it's been, yes, sir, yes, sir. How can I help you, sir? I'm pleased to be here, sir. I'll give you whatever I can give you, sir. For 16 years, not a single incident of disobedience or insurrection, not a single incident of corrective action, just 16 years of service. And remember, it's to a king, by the way, who took them out of their home. This is the king of Babylon that won the war against Judea in the Babylonian-Judean war and took from Judah all the talent and all the youth and all the money and all the resources. And this is the king they're serving. And so for a decade and a half, they've been loyal to this king. They even go so far as to petition their God when he's troubled by a dream he can't remember. And so for 16 years, this has been their life. Nothing but faithful, honorable service. And not because of their love for the king, but because of their love for God. For 16 years, not a peep. And yet despite every effort to keep the peace and be faithful and be loyal, in verse 1, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold. And in verse 4, notice it says, the herald proclaimed aloud, you are commanded, O people, nations and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. 16 years of faithful service to the king out of a faithfulness to the Lord, and trouble still finds them. Well, that's just the point. Just because we suffer something doesn't mean the person has necessarily done anything to cause it. Now, sometimes it does. Sometimes we're suffering the consequences of our own action. You know, I think of the thief on the cross next to Jesus and how he looked to the other thief in Luke chapter 23, and he said, we're receiving the due reward for our deeds. Sometimes we receive what our deeds have earned, but other times we've done nothing to deserve it. Trouble just seems to find us despite anything we try to do to avoid it. Sometimes trouble will seek you, and not because you've done anything wrong. Other times it will be because you've done everything right. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. There will be times in your life when simply doing the right thing will cause problems. There will be times in your life where doing nothing will cause problems. And so as far as you're able, live in peace with other people. But sometimes trouble will seek you. The second thing we notice from their experience here is the world will try and silence you. Notice in verse 6 it says, whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning furnace. Therefore, as soon as all the people heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. You remember how I said it's been 16 years since chapter 2. Well, in 16 years, the nation of Babylon has gotten bigger and stronger. For 16 years, they've been benefiting from the service of talented people that belong in Judah but are now in Babylon. People like Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, the doctors, the engineers, the artisans, the craftsmen, all the talent that was taken from Judah and brought to Babylon for 16 years that's been making the nation better and stronger and more powerful. For a decade and a half, the military has been at peace and they've been refilling their ranks from the war. The treasury is richer. The king is more powerful. The nation has bigger borders. For 16 years, it's been growth and boom. For 16 years, the king has lived with the prophecy that Daniel gave him back in chapter 2. The answer to the question, what was my dream? Well, Daniel tells him, he says in verse 31, you, O king, behold a great image. This image, mighty and of exceeding brightness, stood before you, and its appearance was frightening. The head of this image was fine gold, its chest and arms silver, its middle and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly iron and partly clay. And he goes on to say at the very end of verse 38, you rule over them all. You're the head of gold. Another kingdom inferior to you shall rise after you. And so for 16 years, Nebuchadnezzar's been enjoying the influx of talent and money, the building of his army, the knowledge that God himself said nobody ever will be as great as you when it comes to ruling. His kingdom would be better than everyone else. And for 16 years, that ego has grown, and that pride has grown, and that sense of godship has grown. And so you notice how the very same king who in chapter 2 fell upon his face in homage to Daniel and his God, in chapter 3 commands Daniel to fall on his face in homage of him. It's the same king who was told he would be the head of gold, but in chapter 3, the whole image is now made of gold. And we see this evolution of his pride. You know, in Romans 12, Paul tells us not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought, but with sober judgment, according to the measure of faith God has assigned each one of us. And this is why. Because the bigger and stronger Nebuchadnezzar has gotten in his mind, the smaller and weaker God has become in the lives of the people of the nation. And with that increase of power on the side of the government and the decrease of reverence for the God of the Hebrews, we see the pressure comes with it to silence anybody who speaks about it. And so it says here, whoever does not fall down and worship will be cast into a burning fiery furnace. Did you know when the United States was formed, the founding fathers openly prayed? They called for God's will for our country. They followed God's will for our country as best they knew. They included in documents like the Declaration of Independence phrases like God and Creator and Divine Providence. What's more is the majority of the founding fathers were seminary educated, and they weren't shy about that. They had in their mind a country with a big God and a small government because they had seen in England what happens when the king becomes too strong. And so in Article 1 of the Constitution, it outlines very specifically the powers the federal government should have. Things like taxing the populace and developing and maintaining a military and declaring war and coining money and post office and even regulating commerce between the states. But it's a very specific list. And then in Article 10, as it closes, it says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution are reserved to the states respectively, or, in their minds, better yet, to the people themselves. They wanted a little government and a big God. Fast forward 250 years. Our federal government has become the largest employer in the nation. Some would say in all of the world. Not only does it regulate all the stuff it was intended to, but now you can add to the list marriage and health insurance and education and parenting, and on it goes. And with all of that comes the pressure toward believers to keep quiet about their faith. As the government gets bigger, as the king gets bigger and the powers become bigger, God becomes smaller. It happened in Rome. In Rome, believers were allowed to worship God, but first they would have to go and pay a tax. They would have to buy a certificate saying first and foremost they gave homage to Caesar. And after that, they could worship whoever they wanted. The same thing has happened throughout history. As kings become stronger, God becomes weaker. That's why the number one most avoided topic in America right now is the topic of religion. People will get on social media, on the news, on TV, on the internet. They'll talk about their sex life before their prayer life. That's why in 2018 in Orange County, California, the school board voted to include LGBT studies in sex education and told parents, despite their religious objections, they could not opt their children out or they would be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. That's why teachers who teach any kind of science in public schools and they dare to bring up any view that isn't Darwinian evolution are faced with the fear of losing their jobs. That's why right now in the U.S. House of Representatives, there is a bill that has passed committee that would seek to limit what churches and religious organizations can do in their own buildings. You know, in chapter 6 of Daniel, he'll be arrested for prayer in his own home. So I have a question. Do you ever feel that pressure? The pressure of the world to keep quiet, to just shut up about your faith. Nobody wants to hear it anyway. Leave that stuff at home. Whether it's at work or with your friends or maybe with family. Maybe you know that person doesn't want to hear. Maybe the policies say you're not allowed to share. The gospel isn't welcome. Have you ever felt that pressure? I imagine that's what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are dealing with right now. The pressure to just keep quiet, to just put their God in the closet and close the door. Leave that at home. We don't want to hear about that here. They look around and they see thousands of officers of the government bowing down before this golden idol. And maybe somebody even elbows them and goes, just bow down, just do it. Just get it over with, and then you can do whatever you want. But just do it to make them happy. Do you know what's going to happen if you don't? God will understand. He'll know that you didn't have a choice. They find themselves in a situation where the pressure is intense and their faith has just become the most unpopular message in the world. And notice the response in verse 18 to their refusal. It says, therefore, at the time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your God or worship the golden image you've set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I've set up? Now, if you're ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. Bygones will be bygones. We'll just swipe this under the carpet. It'll be like it never happened. All will be good. But, he says, if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? You know what I find interesting is just a chapter before when God provided him the interpretation of the dream, he said, God of gods and Lord of kings, the revealer of mysteries. And here he says, who can overpower me? And so trouble will seek you. The world will try and silence you. And if you refuse, as we see right here, your enemies will try and scare you. They'll try to pressure you and threaten you into capitulating their view, because that's exactly what happens here. fall down and worship. If you do not, you're going into the furnace. I have a question. How willing are we as believers? And I'm not just talking about us, but 2019, the United States of America, how willing are we as believers to suffer for our faith? And I don't mean suffer sideways looks, and I'm not talking about a little bit of inconvenience here or even the loss of a tax exemption. I'm talking about really suffering. You see, it's easy to be faithful when times are good, isn't it? It's easy to be faithful when money's in the bank and the roof over your head isn't leaking, and there's food in the pantry, and the bills are paid, and relationships are good, and we're healthy. It's easy to be faithful when God blesses with surplus. But what about when God blesses with suffering? When God blesses with need? You ever think of suffering and need as a blessing? We don't often think in those terms, at least not in our day and age. We often think of these things as stuff to be avoided, but the Bible would say there's blessing in it. In 1 Peter chapter 3, he says, even if you should suffer for righteousness, you will be blessed, he says. In 1 Peter chapter 4, it says, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes to you, as though something strange were happening. But insofar as you share in Christ's sufferings, he says, rejoice. Paul says in Philippians chapter 1, for it has been granted to you. This is a gift, he says, that for the sake of Christ, you should not only believe, but also suffer for his sake. In Acts chapter 5, the early church suffered for their faith, and they found it to be a blessing. It says they left the presence of the council rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer dishonor for the name. We don't think that way anymore. Suffering now is something we want to anesthetize. We want to numb the pain, run from the pain, get rid of the pain. The Bible would say embrace it. Use it to build you up. In James chapter 1, he tells us that rejoice when trials come upon you because it's building you in your faith. How willing are we to be faithful when the world threatens to take away everything we've worked for if we refuse to bow down before it? Now, we don't have any 90-foot statues in our day and age, but here's what we do have: careers, political correctness, other people's opinions, popularity. And here's how it works. Either we bow down before the altar of career and we put our career ahead of everything else, or the threat is miss out on the promotion, miss out on the advancement, miss out on the better life for the family. How many people have ever felt that pressure to put your work before your worship and your family or something else of value? Put other people's opinions ahead of everything you believe, because who wants to live in isolation? Who wants to be unpopular? Put political correctness ahead of convictions or face being labeled a hater and a bigot. Nobody wants to be called those things. And so either the world would say bow down or suffer the consequences. It happens every day. It happens today. And it happened to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Because it says in verse 15, fall down and worship the image I've made. If you do not, you will be cast into a burning, fiery furnace. So trouble will seek you. The world will try and silence you. Your enemies will come along and try and scare you. But here's the thing. People will see you. They will watch and look and observe what you do. They're looking to see how you respond. You see, everything up until now is stuff you can't control. You can't control what someone else does. We can't control what someone else thinks. We can't stop bad things from happening to good people. It's a fact of life. Nothing we've talked about up until now is up to us, but this part is. This is where we can stand out. When Jesus said to shine your light in the world, this is where it's ignited. This is where we dare to be different. And notice how Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego dare to be different in verse 16. They said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. Imagine that, standing before the king of Babylon and all his money and riches and soldiers and all the glory that comes with him, to say, we don't answer to you. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, even if he chooses not to, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image you've set up. It will never happen. We have a God who's more powerful than you, and he can pull us out of that furnace if he wants. But even if he chooses to let us suffer for our faith, we will never bow before that atrocity you've created. Imagine the boldness it took to stand there and the courage and the fortitude it took to stand there and say that to the king. You know, it was Warren Wiersbe who said, times of adversity are usually times of opportunity. One of the greatest mistakes believers make in our faith is to think that when we face a challenge, nobody sees. Because the truth is, the world is watching. And it's watching to see what you're going to do. How will you respond? And it expects you to give up. It expects you to just go with the flow and just do what everyone expects. You know, somebody put it this way, any dead fish can float downstream. But it takes boldness to stay faithful. That's where the difference is. And so I dare you to be different that way. I dare you to be faithful regardless what the world says. I dare you to be faithful regardless what the situation is. I dare you to be faithful regardless the outcome, regardless the threats, regardless popular opinion. I dare you to live in faith and not fear. I dare you to be different.
You've been listening to Light the Way with Dr. Colin Munger, the senior pastor of Shepherd of the Hills Church. If you'd like to hear this message again, stop by our website at lightthewayradio.org. Not only will you find an archive of Pastor Colin's teachings there to listen to, but there you can find out more about our ministry. Jesus said, "You are the light of the world." And we want everything we do and say to revolve around that. If you'd like to get behind what we're doing, please visit lightthewayradio.org and learn how you can become a light partner. When you do so today, we'll say thanks by sending you a free copy of Pastor Colin's book, Meet Jesus. In this book, you'll discover 7 miracles of Jesus and the 7 I Am statements he gave in the Gospel of John. All of it was done so we would have a better understanding of him as God. Again, to become a light partner or just receive more information, log on to lightthewayradio.org. Thank you for listening today, and come back next week as Dr. Colin Munger once again delivers another helpful message from God's Word to help us light the way. In the meantime, remember to be a light to someone this week.